I'm patient. Okay, call the meeting to order. Roll call.
Michael Gable.
Here.
David Helm.
Present.
Andy Berg.
Here.
Leo Blau. Rick Dodge.
Here.
John Poole.
Here.
Greg Ressler.
Here.
And is youth and governance done?
They will be here the next meeting. I think they start.
Okay.
Yes, we'll get a new.
Any citizen comments? Do I hear any citizen comments? We'll close citizen comments. Approval of the minutes for 4/4/16?
Motion to approve the minutes of 4/4/16.
And a second?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
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 Okay, a resolution to modify the Division of Children and Family Services 2016 budget for the Kenosha County Positive Planning Project grant.
Great. Thank you. Well, good evening. So a couple new faces here. So I'm Ron Rogers, again, the director of the Division of Children and Family Services. Thank you, Chairman Gable. And we got an exciting opportunity here. We applied over in the winter months for a grant. And it was with the Child Abuse Neglect Prevention Board. If you know, if any of you have been in the committee before, that used to be called the Children's Trust Fund, but they had a name change a few years ago. So what it is it's a grant to run a parenting program. We're calling it the Kenosha County Positive Parenting Project. It will be working with families in the county, kids 12 and under, and we're really trying to target families that are what we would consider at risk for having troubles with abuse and neglect. So families that are where parents are reporting a lot of behavior problems with their kids, maybe families that are on the lower socioeconomic level. There may be alcohol or drug abuse in the family, or people are wondering about that. They may have been touched by CPS, meaning maybe Child Protective Services got a call about them, but there was no abuse or neglect that occurred at that time. So, but they may be at risk for abuse, neglect, and or they could be at risk for truancy. And what it is we put together a proposal to combine two different parenting programs. It's one is called the Triple P Primary Parenting Project. It's actually a well-researched project that's been used around the world, not just in the U.S. It's as followers in different countries around the world, and effective black parenting. And we were awarded the grant. So there were 12 applicants for the grant, and they awarded five, and we were the second highest scoring proposal. We were beat out by Indian Head Community Action Agency in somewhere in northern Wisconsin by half a point. So we were a little bit chagrined. We wanted to be number one. But we did a very good job on that. And this will go in our prevention services network. So for those of you new to human services, DCFS, we investigate child abuse and neglect. We work with families where abuse and neglect has occurred to try to help families not abuse their kids again, improve their parenting. We work with juvenile delinquent kids and their families. Those are all sort of court-ordered families we work with. We also have another arm of DCFS that works really to prevent child abuse and neglect. And families go into that arm. We get referrals from the community, from the schools, from ES workers. And this grant will go into that arm of DCFS. And it's really working with families where abuse and neglect hasn't occurred yet, and we want to prevent abuse and neglect from occurring. We were awarded $152,000 grant, and it's a one-year grant, renewable for up to 3 years. And we will be contributing $34,000 in-kind match. That includes some of the cost of staff and the rental. So we're asking for your approval to modify our budget, to increase our budget by $152,019 for this year. And it's on a state fiscal year. So this grant will start on July 1st of this year, and year one will end in June, end of June 17, and so on. And we're real happy to get this, and I think we'll add a lot of value to the community. But I'd be happy to answer any questions anyone has about it.
Mr. Chairman.
Yeah,
Usually on federal grants, you have to contribute 10% cash, but they let you do it totally in kind?
Well, it's a mixture of in kind, and this is the Child Abuse Prevention Board, so that's a part of state government. So they're not the same area as the federal government. So they let us do with in kind, and some, and we had staff in place that can work this grant already in this year's budget. Yeah.
That's good to know, I guess.
Yeah.
Any other questions?
Yeah.
Do I have a motion to approve this?
Move to approve.
Second. All in favor?
Aye.
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 Okay. Well, thank you very much. Greatly appreciate it.
Go get the kids. Mental health update, Mr. Jansen.
I don't have one.
Oh, right.
No, I'd like to.
For an update.
Probably both. I'd just like to thank the committee for showing up to the report that we gave last week. I think that was a nice kickoff to a lot of work that we have to do. I put this on the agenda not knowing how many folks were going to be there or not be there to see if we needed to do an overview, but I'm not going to do that with you tonight. If you need or want a hard copy, I do have some with me tonight. I did email the full report and the executive summary to the county board, so you're going to see it twice now. Late this afternoon, and Supervisor Gable, I believe, is going to make some comments on it. I did write a nice little description saying that you had requested it go out. If they have any questions, certainly contact myself or Laverne Jaros for further information. So I don't know if you, based off what you heard last week, if you have some comments. The one thing I would like to share, though, is just today, Laverne bounced me an article from the Mental Health Weekly where Iowa lawmakers passed a bill to allow psychologists prescription authority. So that was one of the things you heard toward the end of my presentation that we added on. Now, the governor hasn't signed this yet in Iowa, but they're hopeful that it will go through. And this is just, like I said, as of April 25th, it looks like they did that. Supervisor Rose contacted me, and I spoke to him on Friday. I believe he is looking at some sort of resolution for the county board to do to kick up to Madison saying, hey, take a look at this sort of stuff and maybe consider it as an option to the shortage of psychiatrists in our state. So the one interesting part of this is NAMI, which is the National Association for Mentally Ill, is opposed to such legislation, which I thought was kind of strange. And so I read, why are they opposed? I'll tell you why. According to this article, it says they acknowledge certainly the serious shortage of mental health professionals in the workforce. However, there is no current evidence that expanding prescribing privileges to psychologists will address these shortages. Well, I still think it's something worth considering. I know Dr. Brian Wolf, who's a psychologist from Professional Services Group, has gone through the appropriate training and education to become a prescriber, if ever allowed, and was lobbying heavy for it 3-4 years ago, maybe?
4 years ago, yeah.
In Madison, and it just didn't get any traction. So just something to consider. I would like to have our ducks in a row before we push it too hard with our legislators and have more conversations with Dr. Wolf as far as, you know, some of the, just because you're a psychologist shouldn't allow you the right to prescribe. You do have to go through some pharmacology training and things like that and understand what you're prescribing people, number one, and then what the requirements of that would be. And maybe we can get something along those lines to go forward, because there are more psychologists than psychiatrists, but don't ask me that number, because I couldn't tell you right now.
This is somewhat related. I would want to know before really making a decision like that, because I'm sure it'd probably come through this committee or maybe legislative or something, a little bit more clarity on professionally the differences between psychiatrist versus psychologist. There's a lot of other policy areas I'm looking at right now where I'm seeing psychology but not psychiatrist in terms of how certain things are looked at and analyzed. And so I want to know, like, professionally exactly what the difference is to make sure I can assess what the future risks might be in doing
seriously?
This.
You don't know the difference between the two?
Well,
one's an MD, the other isn't.
Well,
that's the biggest part.
Well, I get that, yeah. But there's some other questions I'm looking at too that are a part of that beyond just that designation. So That's...
Yeah, psychologists do a lot more, besides being psychiatrists having the MD certain degree, psychologists do a lot more testing and probably more hands-on interaction with the person that is across the table from them. Psychiatrists are more the medication and monitoring, that type of, usually those psychiatrist appointments are 5-10 minutes, boom.
Right, which...
A psychologist is more the treatment piece of that.
More the hands-on.
Which I understand, but we have had a differentiation between the two in terms of dealing with this issue for a while, and so I kind of want to know why. What was the reason? You know, whether it was legit or not legit before making a change. It makes sense to understand.
Sure, I agree with you, and we're going to work with Dr. Wolf just to see what happened back then, what they're proposing, why it was opposed. I think probably you had the better and stronger lobbying group may have had something to do with it, but that might be just a very small piece of that. I'm not even sure the whole profession was behind it.
I'm surprised they would allow them to script anyways, because they're not MDs. That's the only reason I'm saying that is maybe that's part of it. To be able to script, you got to be careful on who you allow to do that generally. Now, I'm not saying this wouldn't apply to that, but that may be part of it. You're talking about a tremendous amount of difference between going to med school and not.
Correct.
And so forth. So maybe that was why. I don't know. Just
yeah,
a guess.
And just what Iowa put in their law was that it would also, besides a doctorate degree in psychology, you'd need to do a postdoctorate master's degree in clinical psychopharmacology, which typically takes 2 years to complete. So it's an intensive degree that includes training in neuroscience, biology, physiology, psychopharmacology, et cetera. So even if this legislation moved forward in Iowa and in other places, it'd still take a couple years for folks to even sign on and say, yeah, I'm interested in doing that. So just more information.
Yeah, and you know, not to dig into this too deeply tonight, which would be very easy to do, I'd be curious to know, you know, educationally where we have folks at in the pipeline in public and private institutions to see how fast something like this could potentially be implemented and then how fast we could examine results on the back end of that.
You'd have to have a school willing to create that postdoctoral master's degree, too.
Yeah, and so, we have folks we can ask that, too, and get those answers.
Sure. And I think Dr. Wolf went down to Atlanta or someplace in Georgia where he did a lot of that stuff. So it must exist out there. But certainly, yeah, this is just something that's in the pipeline. You might hear Supervisor Rose talk about it this evening or at a future county board meeting because he really would like this.
I would think there would be a lot of liability.
Sure. I'm sure there's a lot of, I'm sure psychologists are asking the same type of questions we're, you know, being asked this evening, even in their own profession. So, but just a thought that's out there. So,
First of all, when we talked about this a while ago, I remember I tell you to do this non-PhD level, and I appreciate you did this. It was well done from that standpoint. Mm-hmm. Thank you for that. It was easy to read. Mm-hmm. I remember we talked a little bit, don't put us away with matrix, charts, graphs, words like, you know, okay. So thank you for that. Can you take, if we got a second, can you take me through something that I'm going to show some ignorance on, I guess, is Winnebago, when you consider the word mental illness, okay, or I have a hard time kind of putting drug and alcohol addiction to a certain degree. And that gets in reference with Winnebago. When I was reading the first thing, and can you explain to me, when you're in a crisis going there, does that mean, I thought this was like someone ready to kill people and are just so disturbed that they're going to hurt someone. Are you saying this also applies to someone that is extremely drunk and on drugs? Okay,
If their addiction is to the point of where they require hospitalization for detox, they could end up at Winnebago?
Detox and drug addiction centers have been around forever, since, right? I mean, drug addiction, alcoholism is not something new. It's been it's been going on for many, many years, right? So, why... Let me ask you this. Let me back up. If you're covered by a private health plan, like you and I are covered by employer-sponsored plans, mm-hmm. and we have a drug addiction or an alcohol problem, where do we go? We go to rehab places, right? Could we go to Betty Ford? Could we go to the Hazeltine Clinic?
If the insurance, okay. Yes, those types of things.
Because someone is on Medicaid, they can't go to these places, is that right?
It becomes much more difficult to get them into some of these places. And I don't know, like the Hazeltons or the Betty Fords or, you know, the more...
Well, those are like places where celebrities go.
Yeah, they hear about more often, yes. Whether or not they even accept someone under medical assistance. We have a gentleman in the community who is working with that sort of population to try to find them places when they need that inpatient arm, because there really is no inpatient facility anywhere near here that's going to take you with your MA card, medical assistance card, to do treatment for any length of time. All those shut down in the 90s.
Yeah.
There used to be, I don't know how many up in the Milwaukee area.
If you've ever heard of DePaul Hospital, yeah. It used to be a well-known facility for inpatient alcohol and drug abuse treatment out in the south side of Milwaukee. And as private insurance has changed over the years, DePaul Hospital was lost business. They couldn't keep their doors open. So general people's private insurance does not cover inpatient care. It generally covers outpatient services.
It's treated as any other illness, has been for many years. Your health plan right now we have here covers mental illness as any other illness. It does not discriminate the charge. So correct. It will pay the same as if you had a hysterectomy moment or something. You know what I'm saying?
Yes.
Okay. So if you need to put me in a, where would you put me if I had a tremendous alcohol problem? And I'd be dangerous to you, like I'd threaten you, I'd hurt you, you'd say, you can take me, first you can put me in jail, I'm then going to go in front of a judge. He says, you're so out of control, I got to put you in Winnebago, or would you?
You may not necessarily go into jail. I mean, if you present like that to law enforcement, you're going to end up in the emergency room, and that's where they're going to assess whether or not they need to detain you, and by detain, I mean hospitalization, the State Institute, or St. Luke's, if we can get you in there. And that's going to be step one. They would then make a determination if you needed more long-term, and if it was that you were so addicted, and a lot of these folks are going to have some sort of co-occurring disorder, which means they're also going to have some mental health issue out there. And if that combined with your addiction means you need long-term hospitalization and maybe court intervention, you're going to end up over there where they can court order you into that facility for your treatment. Now, when we're looking at the vast numbers of folks in here, it's more of the mental health areas that land you in the state institutes, then the alcohol and drug. And I'll have to break out those numbers probably just to give you a better idea on those. But I, by and large, you're going to be presenting more with a mental health, I'm going to kill myself or someone else type of thing, okay. Or so, you know, out delusionary that there's no place for you to go but a more controlled setting. So whether that's, if we can't find supports in your family, if we can't at the care center because of your level of need and care is too much, then that's when you're looking at the hospital as a possible placement. So all that stuff gets assessed before we end up in a hospital, or in this case, as you know, what drove our figures was the state institutes.
Yeah, okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Rick?
Yeah, as far as the study, I've been talked to a former County Board Supervisor and Alderman Mark Madori. Mark Madori was quite involved in this when he was on the County Board previously, to the point that he told me that he not only talked to the administration at Kenosha Hospital, which told him that there was no immediate need at that time, but he talked to St. Luke's also. And what he said I found very disturbing was that when he went up and he talked to St. Luke's Hospital, they told him that they provide the service because they have a moral obligation to the community, being religious-based nonprofit organization. They have a moral obligation to the community. I was disappointed in not seeing that moral obligation to the community in our local hospitals here. I discussed it with the administration, I discussed it with Laverne. I understand there's really nothing that we can do. But I just want to let you know that I wish that they would feel that moral obligation to the community and the taxpayers than they do.
Is there some sort of like maybe tax break that they get since they are religious?
They're 501c3, and they could, according to Jeannie Tunkowitz, they could easily demonstrate that they are a they contribute to a lot of charities. So there would be nothing we would be able to do with their tax exempt status. There's absolutely nothing that they were aware of that we're just going to have to bite the bullet and say, well, that's just too bad, and I'm sorry, but I guess sometimes you just got to live with it.
I worked at St. Mary's for 20 years, and we took a lot of patients that other places would turn away. I mean, we had no choice. And like you said, we had a moral obligation to take care of these people.
Community.
I guess a possible solution, we talked about it at the meeting last Wednesday, is if this is going to be a community-based effort. I mean, the County Board and Human Services Committee is not going to be able to solve this problem. We're going to have to bring in help from the community. Maybe as a community, we could use that as some kind of leverage.
Well, I would encourage you with the full report out, if you had the opportunity to go through it, or if you haven't yet, just read to see what those folks are saying that they're willing to discuss and talk about. So those conversations, as I pointed out last week, have all been fairly positive.
Initially they were. I'm under the understanding that they've kind of removed those off the table.
There are some different twists and turns and a little bit of everything, but I'm optimistic that we can still move some of this forward. So.
David? Through the chair to the Director of Human Services, would you like to elaborate on perhaps what some of those twists and turns may be?
Well, I mean, we had talked about possibly sharing a psychiatrist with the local hospital, and I'm not sure that that's going to happen anytime in the near future, but I certainly wouldn't take it off the table. First of all, finding a psychiatrist, as we know, is like a needle in a haystack. And then what does sharing mean? You know, 20% of their time there, 80 here, 50, 50-50, and how would that work out? So it's not stuff that can take place and decisions made overnight. It has to be a little more planful. We had hoped at one point that crisis could talk to folks in the ER, outside of the ER, in a different room where it's quieter and things like that. But there's a federal law that once you walk in the ER, you have to be served by, and say, I'm here for an emergency, you have to receive a service from the ER, and you can't steer them clear of that, or else they face large fines. So some of the ideas we had, unfortunately, have been tripped up a little bit. So there's other ways we can do that, maybe. There's still a way to get in the ER and present as with a crisis and maybe still find a quiet place to talk to them without disrupting the potential of the hospital receiving a large fine for violating that person's right to care is really what it's about.
So,
two examples.
You piqued my interest because it sounded like something that could potentially be a nationwide problem, and our congressman is a Speaker of the House. This seems like the perfect thing to bend his ear about.
Yeah, and I'm not, you'd have to talk. I can get more information from the hospital on what exactly that rule and reg is and how long it's been in place. It may have been there forever. I just found out about it 2 weeks ago when I was meeting with them. We thought we all had a good idea and presented it to them. They go, sorry, violates their right to care. Right. So,
can you, in one of the things, if Medicaid had changed, how would that change things in your mind? If Medicaid I picked up, remember what they don't do, I forget what it is,
you mean paying for the state institutes?
Is that it?
Yes, they don't cover that at all. And that's a federal rule.
But that had to do with the number of beds and so forth. Didn't we
talk
about this before?
Yes, that's at IMD, the Institute for Mental Disease. If you're rated as that, you don't get MA coverage.
You're right. Okay.
But that is in the report is something to explore and look at and see if we can have some discussion along those lines.
Yeah, that IMD, like you say, basically was it 10 beds?
16 beds. Over 16 beds where at least 51% of your population is there for a mental illness. So that's why St. Luke's, which is currently 27 beds we can use, and it's not an IMD because they have many more beds that they have people there for health reasons, not mental health reasons.
Years ago in Racine, when it was St. Catherine, St. Mary's, and St. Luke's, the two hospitals actually, rather than duplicating services, split the services up. You know, one had maternity, one had heart, so they weren't out, you know, duplicating the service. I mean, you could have a kid at the other hospital, but normally, I mean, and we're just asking them to maybe duplicate the psychiatric care for the two hospitals and the one, just, I mean.
I think the hospitals would need to know what kind of numbers that is, and, you know, they'd have to staff it up. And then if we're only sending two or three people there a week or whatever the magic number is, that they aren't, that doesn't pay off for anybody. So, I mean, there's some of that too. When, you know, when I made mention of in a meeting last week was an article I recall someone sent me from 2000 when, I think it was 2000, when St. Catherine's closed down their mental health wing. And part of that was, I think at the time, the hospitals were owned, St. Catherine's and the Wheaton Franciscan was the same group. And they said, well, we'll take on the mental health piece for you, Kenosha, because we have all these beds. And yeah, there was we want something in our community, but okay, that's the next best thing. And we had all those beds. Well, unfortunately, that, as we know, has shrunk.
Thank you. And in talking with Jim Cruiser afterwards, he was relating that there's two clients over that spent over 100 days in Mendota. And I was wondering, you know, I'm assuming that's not all at once. I'm assuming it's like 5 days here, five days.
No, they were long-term placements. Every once in a while, we get what we call outliers to our daily census that are there for sometimes close to a year. And it's because of their significant need and the fact that we cannot find a facility outside of the institute that is willing to take them until they're really stabilized. So that's a very small number every year. Unfortunately, it does occur, and those folks, you know, have to have a lot of issues to be there that long. Because the state institutes are overflowing, and they want to get you out too. So,
well, from what I understand, he said that's the main reason for this funding.
That led to several
blowing out is because some of these people spending a long time
Correct.
At over $1,000 a day.
Yep.
And then, why is there a growing segment of the population with dementia who are violent like this? I mean, you know, we've had dementia.
You know,
is it the drugs or?
No, I don't think so. I think there's just, as America ages and dementia is much more diagnosable now, I think, than it was in the old days. It used to be you were senile, and that was rarely said. And I think it's much more accepted than it was. You know, it's okay that someone has dementia. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, there's a percentage of those folks that act out in an aggressive manner. And you cannot stick somebody in a state institute solely because of dementia, though. You have to find them someplace else. But a lot of nursing homes don't want to take them if they have the aggressive behavior. So it's kind of this round and around we go type of thing with some of those folks. But they also have some sort of mental health condition that ended them in a state institute.
Mm. Yeah.
Well, is there an emergency detention? Or, you know, could that have been diverted to a less costly option for those two somehow?
If the option is available, we're using it. So, I mean, that's just part of what they do every time they're at the hospital. They could be there right now. They're going through, the institute is the last stop in their list of what's available mm-hmm. to help that person. So, yes, we try to avoid that at all costs. In fact, I think out of the over 9,000 crisis contacts, I think you heard only like one out of every 16 ends up at the hospital that causes some sort of disruption or potential placement at the care center or elsewhere.
Yeah, getting back to your question, a lot of the patients are getting older too, so you're going to see more and more dementia as the population ages. And also, I was wondering, you know, tagging on Supervisor's Poole's comment with St. Luke's. Are they not able to handle somebody like that person who ended up having to go?
I think depending on what the situation is, they'll take a look at them, and if they can't handle them, the deal that we have with them is that we look at the state institute. If they're unable to provide the level of care, or if that person is such a danger to themselves or others, then we'll look at transferring up to Winnebago in that scenario. So we've had those discussions. They're very comfortable with that arrangement.
Okay.
So.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Can we have this discussion at some point with whoever the NACO staff member is that deals with mental health? Because they're the ones, you know, communicating Congress and the Senate on what specifically is going on, what's coming in and out of law. There's a lot of conversation happening back and forth. And so some of the issues and problems we've talked about, I would wonder if they'd be able to give clarity on as to whether or not, how long they've been problems in some cases, whether or not they're being fixed, whether or not they found alternate solutions, or whether or not there's maybe even things we're not aware of. That would be a really fantastic thing to do and easy to set up.
We can look into that. I mean,
yeah,
it's a possibility.
Yeah.
That's going to certainly give you a national perspective, but it may...
Even a state perspective, you know, we'll talk to Cruiser and Todd and Peter. And, you know, they're all, even Governor Walker's mentioned the mental health issue. But
well, it's under Governor Walker's tenure here that we have the CCS program, the Comprehensive Community Service Program, that is now 100% covered. If someone's on MA, all that work in the community is covered by medical assistance. They're able to draw down those dollars, our programs, our workers in the county, and that's been a real benefit. And that's the program that went from one in April 2014, one kid, to 117 at the end of April of this year. And then on the adult side, there's over 100 people involved in that. So it used to be a 60-40 split where MA would cover 60 and we'd kick in the rest, the 40%, kind of what CSB is. And that's a community service program. Community service program. CSB. And they're a 60-40. So if we got 100% reimbursement on that, that'd be wonderful.
This is maybe a little outside of our jurisdiction, but it might be interesting to talk to somebody from the National Conference of State Legislators over the phone too, in terms of how things are different state to state and what it is we might be considering looking to do.
Yeah.
That'd give you all the arsenal that you need to write a really, really, really good resolution to the state and the feds.
Got anything else to browbeat John with?
The other night, we will report back regularly to this committee. Probably see it on here once a month. We're setting up those other working groups, and if you want to be involved in those, please contact Laverne, and we'll keep you well informed as to what's going on.
I'll make it very quick. In your educated opinion, this recommendation of looking at getting a psychiatrist, what do you think the chances of something happening? I mean, is it like, are we just off the, I mean, is it possible not?
You know, I think we're better at least starting with that elective rotation of the psychiatry out of the medical school, getting the psychiatrists who are looking for their hours and doing that to start there, and maybe through that you can throw one into your community. But depending on what it is you want to offer, and just getting one doesn't mean necessarily that's a good thing. Is it one that fits your philosophy, everybody's needs are, and things like that? Just having the degree and the doctor in front of you doesn't necessarily mean you're the one, you're the fit for the community. Yeah. So, yeah, that's going to be very tough. We're more likely to get the APNP, the Advanced Practice Nurse Practitioner, with the psychiatric clinical background, which is also difficult to find. But they're out there, and Kenosha Human Development Services just hired one in January. So we're better off, at least not better off, but we're more likely to pull off that.
John, future agenda items. Committee, anything you'd like, John?
Yeah, I for the two new members, what we've done in the past is certainly resolutions this committee hears, and you'll see those when we have grants or other things that pop up. But we've also been bringing in different folks from our divisions to talk about different programs. So if there's something of interest to you that you would like to see in the near future discussed, or just you can contact me or Chairman Gable. We'd be happy to get it scheduled. And
yeah, and what I can say is, unless you've toured Human Services, you can't believe the breadth that they cover. I mean, I can think of three or four places: the Bridges, the Care Center.
Mm-hmm.
You don't work with the ENDS program, but ABRC,
mm-hmm.
The Loan Closet, which.
Oh yeah.
I mean, there's just. Loan Closet, if you ever have anybody in your community needs surgery, you don't have to buy them a walker. You can go down to the Loan Closet. They'll give it, they'll loan it to you.
Wheelchairs,
walkers, high-rise toilets.
Yeah. I mean,
there's all kinds of stuff that Human Services offers. Meals on Wheels is done through Human Services.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, anything like that that you want to learn more about or understand, we can have John Dragon in. They all work for him. Or with him.
Dragon.
better than so who do you want dragged in June?
By one arm.
Kicking and screaming.
I would venture to say that better than drag them in here, take us there and through their program and facilities. I think we get a better understanding of how it works and by actually touring where they're at, their facilities, and what they do in talking to the people there than having somebody come in and talk about it.
No, I agree. And I offered this afternoon to the new County Board Supes and to anybody here, if you want to come down to Human Services and get a Human Service 101, we're welcome you and set up whatever time you have to come in and go from there. It works better 8 to 5 because that's when the business is booming, to get a real good flavor of the place. So any day of the week, just contact me and we'll set stuff up, take you through every division and do a nice tour. But yeah, you're right, like the Bridges and the Care Center, to see those facilities puts things in perspective for you. And if you have a chance for the mental health vigil, which is May, it'll start at Bridges at 5:00, and Bridges is just down the block here where I can get that information out to this committee. And then we'll do the vigil in the park right across the street at about 6:00.
So there might be a flyer on our desk.
Okay, good.
Okay.
You're right, May 18th.
When I was on Public Works, we would occasionally meet at some of the park locations. So, you know, we get to see what the facilities are. Why can't we have some of our meetings at, you know, some of these different locations too?
I have no issue with that at all. The only problem we have with that now is we meet on the same night as the board. So any place we are, we have to get back here sometime before 7:30 or...
Well, I mean, if folks are flexible enough, I mean, we could meet at 5:30. Like the Care Center, which is literally about 2 or 3 blocks from here. If we sat there and had a meeting and the staff came in and talked about what it is they do, it wouldn't necessarily be open at 5:30, but we could have the building open and you could see it. We could do something like that. I think that's a good idea.
I'm sure they'd come in.
Yes.
Take us on a tour.
Sure.
And like I say, Bridges is only 3 blocks east.
Yes. So all those are relatively close. And then meeting in our building is a little further down the road, but I mean, that would be better just to come by during the day and we could get you a tour.
Would you be interested in doing something like that?
Sure, certainly. Yeah.
Not a problem.
I think it gives you, you know, more of a flavor, you know, what they're doing.
More hands-on, yeah.
Yeah.
Do you want me to explore looking at Bridges in June?
Yeah, that would work. We'll meet there at, say, 5:30.
Is that
5:00? Well, what's good for the committee? I don't have a light.
Well, as long as you let me know, because I thought we were meeting at 6:30. That's why I was late.
This is not judicial.
Walking in here.
I will. We will see that you get the correct time.
Okay, thanks.
You want to see if you can set something
sure.
for the Care Center?
Sure.
Okay. We'll go see Byron.
Yep.
Good.
Thank all right, you. I'll look at the June, and I'll let you know. I'll find out tomorrow and just send an email out there.
Okay, and I think I gave him a flyer last week about the Bridges.
Oh, okay.
So that's why I knew it was the 18th, and mm-hmm. my dad was.
Very
so, okay, that's some more. And if you think of anything else you'd like you know, John to bring in here, you know, feel free to let me know or let John know. He answers this on occasion.
Caller ID.
Such other business is authorized by law. Committee member comments, Mr. Dodge.
I was at the recent Brookside trustee meeting. I try to make most of their meetings. It happens to be in my district. While I was there, I was asked by Fran Petrick and Bob Pitts, who was the president of the trustees at Brookside, to read a letter into the record at this meeting. So I'd like to do that. Okay. On behalf of Brookside Care Center, I wanted to inform you, the members of the county board and the county executive, of a generous donation that was received by Mr. Joseph Bratelli. Joseph Bratelli passed away on March 10th, 2015. For his death, Joseph Bratelli created a trust agreement naming Brookside Care Center and a number of other family members, educational foundations, and healthcare institutions as beneficiaries. Specifically, the trust agreement provided for a distribution of 1/16th of all non-personal property assets owned by the trust at that time of Mr. Bratelli's death to be given to Brookside Care Center Activity Fund. This non-personal property assets consisted of both stocks and cash. Mr. Bratelli's estate has now been settled, and Brookside Care Center received a total donation of $228,005.34. There were no restrictions on this donation other than it be used for activities and for the benefit of the residents at Brookside Care Center. This money has been placed with the Kenosha Community Foundation. Brookside Care Center will work with the foundation, Brookside Board of Trustees, and the Kenosha County Division of Financial Services to closely ensure that the funds are protected and that Mr. Bratelli's wishes are carried out by benefiting the residents of Brookside Care Center. Mr. Bratelli had a deep appreciation for the services that Brookside Care Center provides and its impact on the community. We wanted to inform you, the county board, and the county executive of this generous donation. I also wanted to publicly thank Mr. Bratelli and his family for this donation. The residents of Brookside Care Center will benefit tremendously from this generosity. Sincerely, Francis Petrick, Administrator.
Any other committee comments? I'll entertain a motion to adjourn.
Move to adjourn.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
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 We're done. Amen.
Are we going to be at 6 from now on?
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah. I'm just kidding you.
No, we almost have to.
Well, I wasn't looking at this. I was looking at the one on here. And then
you may want to sign this.
Yeah.
We almost have no choice because.